Hello and welcome to The Newism, where we aim to unearth ideas, amplify voices and fuel fires in order to create a sustainable, inclusive global system where humans live within the means of the planet and all forms of life can thrive. We're back after a break with a new, slightly different episode of the podcast. This time, Mel and Alex interviewed each other as part of a series of talks organised by the Impact Trust and the Colab.World to celebrate Earth Day. Coming from different generations, we discussed the responsibility of each generation in the climate crisis and, more importantly, how we can work together to create solutions that work. We'll be back properly in the coming months with a brand new format and lots of exciting guests, so stay tuned and we hope to see you there.
Hi everyone, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We're really pleased to have you all here. We are the Newism, and our goal is to look at ways to create a better, more inclusive and more sustainable system for a modern world. We think, and you probably agree by the very fact that you're here, that the current system doesn't work. And there's something that's gone fundamentally wrong, and our goal is to find ideas and innovations and ways that we can change that to create a brighter future for everyone. This talk today, and I'll go into more detail in a minute about what it's about, but this talk is part of a series celebrating Earth Day, which is tomorrow on the 22nd of April. The series is hosted and organised by the Impact Trust and the Colab World, and we're really excited to be part of it. So more about the conversation today. Each week, we have a conversation between Mel and me over the medium of a Google Doc about an important topic from the perspective of the generations from which each of us come. I am a millennial and Mel is a baby boomer. And we turn that conversation into a blog, which we publish to our website. This week, we're kind of doing that, but in a new format, which we're going to have a conversation together in front of you guys. We're going to publish it, we're going to share it at the end as a blog, but also as a video and a podcast. And what we're really excited about is that for the first time we have an audience, so you can listen and then share your thoughts and your questions at the end. That will be a really exciting addition for us. So this is the start of something really exciting. It's a real experiment. We are relaunching in a different format in the next couple of months. It will be all about people who are doing exciting things for a better future, sharing their ideas and then discussing those ideas, particularly with young people. So we're really, and this is kind of the first step on that journey. We're talking about something today that couldn't be any more important. Obviously, it's Earth Day tomorrow, and we'll be talking about how to prevent the impending, well, hopefully not impending, but the ever looming climate catastrophe and environmental disaster that awaits us if we don't do something quickly, if we don't change our behaviour as a species pretty quickly. To introduce ourselves quickly, Mel Young, my co-founder at The Newism, is a really well-known social entrepreneur. He has set up a number of successful social enterprises, including perhaps most famously the Homeless World Cup, which uses football to inspire homeless people to rebuild their lives. He's written three books, one of which was with me under the guise of The Newism, and he's spoken at such places as the World Economic Forum and at TEDx events. I'm Alex Matthews. My background is in marketing and writing. I met Mel when I worked at Ashoka, which is a network of leading social entrepreneurs. Mel is a fellow there, and we have been working together on The Newism for the last three or so years. So we'll crack on with our conversation, but please do put any questions you might have in the chat box rather than the Q&A box, in the chat box, and we will answer them. And also any questions, but also any ideas and any thoughts that you have. Those would be really valuable to us as we go on this adventure, and we'll answer any questions at the end. So without further ado, unless Mel has anything to add, we'll get started with the first question. So Mel, older people of baby boomer generation, Generation X as well, are often blamed for climate change and for the way that the environment, for the problems that face the environment and the planet today. That's largely because of the rise of consumerism after the Second World War and the second half of the 20th century. So how would you defend yourself and your generation?
Well, thanks, Alex. And it's always good to talk. We have some really good conversations in our blogs that we publish regularly. And so this is a very important topic. To answer your question, although, you know, a whole generation isn't kind of one mass, there's also different people in the generation, but it's pretty difficult to defend the baby boomer generation in terms of creating the mass consumption that dominates the world. And that mass consumption is causing kind of the distress for the planet and then for everything connected with it. I think that's kind of obvious now. Probably in defense of the baby boomer generation or generations, I don't think that we were actually aware of the implications of the growth of consumerization when we were younger. And indeed, it's only in more recent times, so maybe over the past 10 years, that it's become apparent that the waste and our lifestyles have created this damage. But at the time, going back, we were a generation that was large, boomer, of course, and was embracing many things, material things. We were a new generation. Coming from the previous generation, which had come out of two world wars, was used to austerity, and younger people wanted a new world and created that, and through a cultural revolution in the 60s, which is very well documented, which is about color in fashion. It's about music, and it's about a kind of can-do generation. We can do anything. And we were confident in ourselves, very enterprising, smart, innovative. And so it was a good time to be in, I think. But to be honest, we cared as well. I mean, there were issues around civil rights that we really cared about. You know, I was involved in demonstrations like many of my peers, anti-apartheid demonstrations. We saw that as completely unfair. Anti-war demonstrations, we wanted peace. So it wasn't that the generation was bad in terms of the environment. It was just we weren't aware, I think. And I often reflect on if we'd been aware, what might have happened. But there were other factors that contributed towards mass consumption. It wasn't just the baby generation being enterprising and innovating and wanting to do things. Actually, it was government policy. So if you start to look at credit, for example, governments introduced credit that people could have, so increased spending power, quite simply so that we could have more things. And then as the generation got older, so we just consumed more and more and more. And, you know, we wanted to have the car. We wanted to travel to our holiday destinations on aeroplanes, and everybody else was doing it, so why couldn't we do it? And that then just became the norm. It was, we wanted to be part of that society, and government policy and economic policy allowed us to do that without actually understanding the consequences. Now, we come, if I think that the previous generation to my one, you know, my mother and father's generation, they would, sometimes I would refer to them as the repair generation, because I always remember that really nothing was ever thrown out, if you like. So if there's a hole in the sock, the sock was darned, you know, you didn't throw it out. It was fixed. Everything was fixed. And when you bought things, they were forever. And so they became a bit of a hoarder, you know, in terms of there was things that happened, well, I'll need that one day for something or other. And but now then you moved on to where my kids were, who would look at buy a computer, and I would say, well, you know, that's great. We'll have that for the next 20 or 30 years or lifetime. And they would be going, what? No, you replace that after 2 years and your phone after 2 years. And so we've become the throwaway generation. So from my folks' generation through to my children, you can see a complete change in attitude and then a complete change in the way the economic system works. And I think that's where the challenge is. And yes, I think the baby boomer generation is responsible. We are guilty. We've been right in the middle. But I think in our defense, we weren't aware about what we were doing. But I'd be very interested in your take towards our generation. Do you blame us? Are we the bad guys, or do you think we just were blinded by what was going on and we didn't really know?
I think it's just a fact that the problems that the planet faces were accelerated by your generation. You know, I think if we all lived how your parents' generation lived, I don't think we'd be in this state. I think the progress, and undoubtedly a lot of progress was made, you know, in the latter half of the 20th century. So I think, you know, that's one thing that is good, but I think along with that progress did come a lot of problems for the planet. So I think that is undeniable. What I do think, so in that respect, I suppose, yes, your generation is bad, but, and I put that in inverted commas, but what I also think is that, as you said, that you didn't know, like you didn't know that, you know, the plastic you were using, the cars you were using, the flights you were taking, that they were causing all these environmental problems because no one was telling you. It's like, you know, when people first started smoking, they didn't know that smoking was bad for you. So I suppose it's the same thing. And so I think it's quite easy for people of my generation, and so I'm a millennial, and the generation below me, which is kind of, you know, teenagers and people in their early 20s now, it's quite easy to just say it's their fault, and therefore in a way there's not much we can do, therefore there's not much that we, the young people, can do about it, you know, it's done. So it's quite easy to pass the blame, but I don't think that's a good way of looking at it, because actually we're not saints either, you know. While we like to think of ourselves as, you know, very environmentally conscious, or many of us like to think of ourselves as very environmentally conscious and aware, and, you know, it's young people who go on the climate strikes with Greta Thunberg and, you know, on social media and, you know, making changes like, you know, cutting out meat and dairy or becoming more vegan or, you know, upcycling, wearing vintage clothes. I think all those are good things, but also we're the ones who jump on 5, 6, 7, 8 flights a year because it's so easy and cheap to go to from the UK to Europe for a nice sunny holiday, and no one really wants to stay in rainy old England for a summer holiday, so we do that, and we have cars and we use plastic coffee cups, and, you know, we want to have the latest, as you mentioned with your children, the latest phone or computer. So actually, you know, I think there's, as always, more shades of grey than black and white here. The other interesting thing that I was reading about in preparation for this talk was that, in fact, over 55s, which falls neatly into the baby boomer bracket, they are much better at adopting environmentally friendly behaviours than many people of my age. So, for example, people who are over 55, this is the surveys from the UK, they're more likely to use less single-use plastic, they're more likely to go on fewer flights or to drive their cars less or buy seasonally. So I thought that was really interesting, that's something that kind of gets left out of the equation somewhat. And I wondered if that kind of resonated with you as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think our title's the Millennials Against the Boomers here. And I see a comment in the chat, you know, about atomic bombs being dropped, pre-boomers, that's right. We're not, I think, letting off previous generations for some of the horrors that they did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not right to kind of caricaturize whole generations because there's so many different people, good and middling and bad in them. I do think, though, that it's easier, in a sense, for people who've, say, retired, to answer your question, to get involved in recycling than say people who are younger, who are charging around, maybe got young children and you know, don't necessarily have that as a priority. But it is interesting, though, that you know, the whole issue of damage to climate is being done and environmental issues is being driven by a younger generation, by younger people. I think that's incredibly important because it's about that awareness. And if the older generations then are adhering to it, because practically it's easier for them to do that, to sort out the plastic bottles from the newspapers and so on and so forth, put them in different bins. That's all well and good. I think so. My sense about the younger environments have done a great job in terms of raising the awareness and actually educating us, the older generation, if you like, on these issues. Then we're responding. My challenge now, though, I think, to the climate protesters in particular, is I think generally that we've got the message here now, actually, unless something happens, that there's going to be some real problems for the planet down the line. The issue for me is we need to be doing things. What are we going to do about it practically as individuals and as society and as governments? That's the challenge. And my sense is that's where younger people should be concentrating their minds at the moment. It's a harder question than kind of saying, we have to do something about the climate. We do. We have to do something about the environment. We do. What do we do? So to you, what do we do?
Well, there's a lot that we can do individually. We've already touched on some of them with, the recycling and the reducing our use of single-use plastic and maybe taking fewer flights. But I think there is an important role for individuals to play. But what I think is important is difficult is the fact that it can feel, so there's a lot of visibility on everyone's life at the moment with social media in particular. And if I'm doing something, if I say, right, I'm not, and this sounds a bit pathetic, but if I say, right, I'm not going to fly anymore, I'm only going to do holidays in which I can get to by train. And then I see all my friends flying off to the Caribbean or to Thailand or whatever. And I think, well, my little flight to France probably wouldn't make that much difference. And I think what I'm saying is that if we are to, I think individual actions are really important, but I think that the responsibility needs to be shared across all of society and not just by those people who are willing to do it. Because apart from anything else, there might not be enough people who are willing to do it. So I think partly we need to be told what to do. And that's difficult in itself because no government wants to be the government to say, right, you can only take one holiday a year or you can only take one holiday every 3 years. But I think there does need to be there needs to be individual responsibility, but I think there needs to be some more structural action, policy changes.
Yeah, so in some senses, what we're talking about here is individual freedom to do what we like. Against responsibilities around the planet. Mm. So to pick on your example you gave about flying away on holiday, what are we starting to say? That we understand that air travel really damages the planet. I mean, there's so much evidence around that. So are we saying, we're going to have to stop getting on flights then? And so we can make an individual decision that we are going to only go on one flight a year as opposed to 10 flights a year or whatever. But how are we all expected to do that, to understand our responsibility to do that? Or are we expecting governments to come in and say, no, this is the rule now because we are protecting the planet? Where does that sit? And it's very difficult, as you say, if you have friends who are going off to Spain on holiday and flying and you might want to, but because you're being more responsible, you're not going. How do we get to a situation where individuals start taking responsibility, start understanding that what they are doing is causing problems to the planet and that we have to change? How do we get to a point where we get into a situation whereby we understand that we all have to be responsible tourists, if you like? How do we move there?
That's $1 million question. I think it's a lot about education. I think we're doing a lot about education and awareness at the moment. And I don't know, what do you think the answer to that question is?
I think what the challenge starts to become, you ask these questions. So that, to me, that's the question you ask the climate protesters on the street. I'm going, rather than sitting here at the moment protesting against climate, which is correct, how do we develop a responsible tourist? Let's stay on tourism for a moment. How do we create a responsible tourism policy? What does that mean, actually, a responsible tourist policy? Does it mean that we stop moving around? And if so, what's the implication for that? Does it mean we can move around, but we do it in the following ways? And where does government policy sit in that? So are we kind of saying, yeah, we want to have air travel, but not using oil, petrol, etc. But we're going to have different types of way to fly around the place, but it's okay. But in the meantime, we'll tramp all over the mountain when we get there, kind of thing. So that becomes the challenge. I haven't got an answer to that, but it seems to me that that's the areas that we need to concentrate on. How do we create policies in different sectors, and tourism being one of them, where we all can buy into it and say, hey, this is the way we want to proceed in the future?
Yeah, I think it has to be a lot. It's going to be a long process of discussing what we want, what's needed, what we want, digging out the current innovations that there are, current ideas, and bashing it out and having a go. And if it doesn't work, and talking to people and seeing what they want. You're right. I think it has to come from all people rather than come from top down. It has to come from the bottom up. And that's what we're doing, isn't it? I think at the Newism, I think that's the aim, is to unearth these innovations and these ideas, put some sunlight on them, and help hopefully watch them grow, that, you know, and then maybe one day they become adopted. But one thing I think is quite difficult, sorry, were you going to say something?
No, when you go.
Is, and you and I touched on this earlier, is all these restrictions, and going back to the generational divide, as it were, is all these restrictions are going to be in place for my generation and the ones following me. While my parents' generation, your generation, my parents' generation, you know, grandparents to an extent, they've had all these kind of freedoms, you know, that unallayed consumerism, going on flights without worrying about it, discovering the world. And there's a lot of good that comes with that, you know, the flying around the world without worrying about your carbon footprint means that you have a better understanding of other people, for example. And is that going to go away if we're staying on the example of travel? Is that going to be more difficult to obtain, to achieve for my generation and in the future?
I think what has to happen is that you can't go back in time and start to say that generation had a bad time, went through two world wars, and this generation had a good time because it was materially bonkers and went shopping all the time and traveled around the world. We have to move forward and change. So it's all about thinking through then, if you're using tourism again as an example, what's quality tourism? So what's a better way of being a tourist for the world than the way we do it currently? So that you get to a point where, you know, in 20, 30 years time, people will look back at our generation, go and laugh and kind of go, look what they used to do. They used to get crowded, smelly airports and get in overcrowded planes, destroy the planet as they sat and then sat on overcrowded beaches. What a bunch of idiots. Because we've moved on then into a place where travel and tourism is making much more sense in terms of the way it's done, and it's a good experience. So it's all about how you kind of get this balance between having a good time as a tourist, but actually not destroying things in the process. So I think it's about, you know, as you say, it's about individuals trying to come up with ideas, thinking through what they are on a practical basis, but also policy starting to emerge in government and being smart about those policies. So if you think about, you know, the use of the car and how much damage that causes, well, it's all about encouraging people into public transport. That means government has to invest in public transport, effective local public transport. It means that, you know, we get used to cycling more. It means that we maybe don't have to travel as much, and COVID has shown us how actually we potentially don't have to move around as much and cause so much damage to the environment in the process. And so you have policies that are developed with government at the same time as you've got individuals taking some responsibility. So I remember a couple of years back, I heard a presentation by a senior civil servant in the in the Dutch Utrecht City Council, and he started off his presentation by showing a picture of a tunnel for cyclists underneath a motorway or a big main road, and he said, we spent €1 million on that tunnel. And you're kind of going, wow. And then went on to say, you might think that's very, very excessive. But he then went to show a bigger map and how the investment in this tunnel had actually created a whole change in terms of the way people moved around. And you could only really actually get efficiently from A to B by either walking or going on a bike. Going on a car became nonsense. And so what he was describing was, overall, the city had a policy about keeping people active, about helping to protect the environment, and thinking through what they were doing on a practical basis. Now, that's the sort of thing that I think where you can get governments coming together with people, and then people will react accordingly. So they will walk and cycle through the tunnel and use the tunnel quite a bit. I think it's in that area where you start to get solutions, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's thinking about ideas and their ramifications and what else is affecting the system. It's all about the whole system of things that contribute to one single item. It goes far deeper than just the surface level. Oh, we want to get people on bikes. It's thinking about the behaviour, it's thinking about the infrastructure, it's thinking about the investment, it's thinking about so many different things. So, and then encouraging, as you say, that individual behaviour. So it's a two-pronged attack. And how are we going to do that? How are we going to get people?
Well, I mean, I think it's like newism, I guess, that that's where we're putting this out there. And I'm a great believer in what you've got to do is to try and be constructive, because it's very, very easy to be to protest, okay? And much more difficult to talk about what you will replace it with. So if you, I know we don't want to be talking about tourism all the time, but we're getting stuck on how do you create a responsible tourism policy, for example? So let's talk about that. And there's lots of people. I mean, the generation now, I think, is very aware of these issues and has good ideas. So how do you take these ideas, work them through, you see if they're practically effective, and then start doing them. And then as you do small things, actually, these can come together to form bigger policy. You start to say, hey, this is the way we should be behaving. This is how we will solve this problem. This is how we'll make the planet much more sustainable. I think one of the big challenges, so that's what I will be doing and that's what we're doing. I think one of the big challenges we still have for the planet, and I see some of the points in the chat, which are great, by the way, thank you for that. I still think that one of the underlying problems we have is about the economy. And so the economy is still based fundamentally on growth, and a successful company or business is measured on how well it's growing, issues of scale, how profitable it is, and indeed how much you make. So, you know, I'm not a shopper, and I think there is an opportunity as we come out of the pandemic to create something new going forward. But so many of the politicians and others are talking about going back to normal. And I think rushing back to shops to buy lots of things. But that seems to be the default position for the economy, like go back and start consuming again, en masse. And I think we have to create a new way of thinking about that. How we measure the performance of a company, for example, which is not simply driven by how much you're growing, how profitable are, how much money you're making. That's a key thing that we have to start looking at. And if we can do that, change the matrix, change the financial system, then I think you can connect that back into ideas that might be coming forward and generate new policies. But at the moment, we're all about growth infinitely in a finite world. And actually, that doesn't work. Clearly, does not work. Any simple mathematician will tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to redefine what success is, because it can't be growth anymore. Let's face it. There's only so much room, so much space to grow in. We've got one planet, and that will be, I think, the big challenge is redefining what a successful economy looks like, what a successful life looks like, what a successful society looks like. It's not about growing, it's not about owning, it's not about having, it's not about using resources, it's about contributing and experiencing and, you know, connecting in different ways.
But you can. There is some beginnings of this. I mean, there are measurements in play with business now, I see again in the chat there is kind of mention of new metrics, and we've got social impact measurements and environmental measurements now. So you can read, particularly for the bigger companies, the public companies, you can read their environmental reports and even their social, and it's starting to become law in some countries that you've got to do that. So all very good. But to me, you're still, the basic problem is still the same. It's about growth and consumerism. And so until we can actually say, look, here's a company X, for example, that's maybe making a financial loss in our current terms, but is actually making a huge impact on the environment. And as a result, it is actually something that's viable and something we should be investing in, that particular company. And we should be rewarding, in a sense, sometimes organizations and companies that say, you know what, we are reducing our scale, and we are stopping developing because we've achieved what we want to achieve. So this kind of issue of mass consumption, which is, the baby boomers maybe contributed massively to, is absolutely key to this, in my opinion, moving forward. Mm. And it's the central debate that we need to have. And it's your generation and the one that's following you that's going to have to tackle this. And there are ideas, as mentioned there in the chat function, some of those things are happening. Social impact bonds are there. That there's even a kind of social market that you can invest in, and so on. So there's stuff there. But it's not central. We're not moving into the old economy, the old way of working, still dominates globally.
Yeah, and I think to wrap up and to look back at that generational aspect, I think yes, my generation has to make this happen. But I think there's a lot to learn from your generation. I think the generation that made the mistakes, as it were, can probably say, okay, well, that was a mistake. Let's do this differently. Let's find ways of doing this differently. And I think that's really key. I think it's not your generation's fault and my generation has to fix it. It's we've all actually got to find a way to do this together. And there's a lot to be learned from on either side.
I think that's right, Alex. And it's wrong to kind of characterize generations, of course, because there's huge differences within them, different thoughts and so on, and people. I think I would probably say to you, though, we shouldn't be going back in time. You can't go back in time. You can't go back and say, that generation that didn't buy things and repaired things, that was right, so let's start doing that. Because actually that was relevant to the culture of that generation at that time. And it worked in that time, and that's the way that people behaved. But you can't bring it back into this one. What is actually required is smart thinking about the future. So what does the future look like? So it's not about mass consumer. It's not about darning socks, say, I use that example, but so what is it? What does it look like then? And that's what your generation so on is going to have to come up with. Because if we keep going, doing the way we're doing and looking backwards, you're not going to be able to look forward. And that's the challenge for generations and young people coming forward. So any time I'm speaking to kind of climate protesters, I agree with them. If I see them, well, before COVID anyway, in the street and so on, I kind of engage with them a bit and I'll chat away and say, yeah, you're absolutely right about what you're protesting about. But hey, how do we, you need to come up with some practical ways that we as the general public can buy into as practical solutions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's the key. I think if that's it from us, Mel, if you've got any other points that you want, burning points to make, I think I might go through the questions, the points that people have made to us.
Yeah.
We've had some interesting points made. So Gregor said, is it about consumerism or the mechanization of our lives, of our society and our wars? Are we personalizing the upsides and objectifying the downsides? That's a really interesting point. I feel like that's one for you, Mel. Throw that into your course, because I don't know the answer.
Well, have a shot at the answer.
Is it about?
Because that's the challenge, you see.
Yeah, I mean, we can't always be relying on the older generation. I don't really understand the point, actually, personalizing the upsides, objectifying the downsides. But yeah, I do think that perhaps it's, when you're talking about the mechanization of our lives, it is easy to outsource our lives and therefore outsource our problems to the plethora of services and products we have at our fingertips. So I think that's definitely a really good point. We have to perhaps take back control and think for ourselves rather than outsourcing everything. You know, there's always someone talking about the next technological solution. And that's great, but perhaps actually the answer is a bit more low tech.
Yes, I agree with you. We have to start taking responsibility and owning the problems. And only the problems individually and collectively, and then come out with solutions. And that's the way forward.
And then Gregor made a good point. I think this is a thought about the atomic bombs weren't being dropped by any of our generations. It was the previous generation. So, you know, the boomers aren't necessarily the bad guys, the worst guys in all of this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's good and bad guys in old generations, very bad guys in some other generations. But generally, I think it would be the baby boomer generation is the one that embraced mass consumerism, without actually understanding the full impact of what they were doing.
Yeah. And we've got a long question here. There's a strong movement of under 21s who are really fighting. I think whilst there are the structurally responsible, many who are part of that era aren't actually implicit in responsibility and are fighting as hard as other young people. That's a good point. You know, as we've said, it's that there are people of your age fighting alongside people of my age, and then there are people of your age and people of my age who don't care. And then I think this is Tamsin saying, I'm not trying to justify our age group. The question goes back to how do we get to the newism, because that is what we want irrespective of age and category. And I think we've touched on that, haven't we? Is we get to a newism by trying to unearth these ideas and discuss these ideas and really tease out what this new society is going to look like. And it's going to be really hard because it's going to be, these questions are complicated, but there are already, and this goes to the heart of what we do actually, that there are so many people doing such amazing things. So it's uncovering those and how do we learn from those and build them into the fabric of society, not make them separate to society. Don't make them fight against society. Make that what they're doing the norm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fight, okay, and it's a movement, and within that you have to bring people with you. You have to persuade them through argument and so on. I think the issue, the comparison with apartheid is fine, because there were a lot of kind of fierce demonstrations and boycotts and so on to win the position, but it was clear. And you know, the people in the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa were coming up with what the alternative was. The alternative to apartheid was X. Okay, this is what will happen when we get rid of a perverted fascist regime. I think that really helped. Now, in the climate debate, okay, we're talking about, but the issue is still how. What are we replacing the current system with that allows us to have the sustainable planet? It's still, I think, one of the challenges.
Absolutely. Well, I think, actually, we've got something in the Q&A, which I'm just going to open.
Yeah, I was reading that. It's a good question from Catherine.
Criteria reflections on the ownership versus access thinking. Jeremy Rifkin says, for boomers, freedom is ownership of something, but for millennials, freedom is access to something via collaborative ownership, such as car clubs and tool libraries, etc. Do you think that's a decent reflection of one of the differences? And how much is a shift in values, priorities, and how much is driven by straitened economic circumstances and financial security? And yeah, that's a really interesting question, as you said.
Yeah, my view that's a really good question, and in some sense it gets to the heart of it. And I think if you go back to the baby boomers, where we're talking about collaborative ownership, I mean, we were a lot of the boomer generation, or certainly my team, were all hippies, and it was all kind of free love, and we share everything, and that was in there, and it was about a lot of it was about a new generation, new thinking, and it was sharing and fairness, and these values were all in there, except it didn't really happen as a lot of the hippie generation, if you like, became entrepreneurs and kind of worked out this is how we can sell lots of records and how we can make money out of selling records, as they were at the time, and t-shirts and paraphernalia all around in the fashion world. So it kind of it grew out of there, but there were some values in there. So I think there are some really positive things happening in terms of this collaborative ownership. So understanding things like car clubs and so on and so forth, and that's coming, and sharing bicycles and so on and so forth. I think that's there. But those shift in values and priorities that Catherine's asking the question about is very, very important, my mind. So it comes down to individuals and us understanding those things about sharing, for example, and that will then form the basis of a new economy that emerges. All the economic systems, in my opinion, are all based to start with on value. So Adam Smith, apparently, but by many, the father of modern capitalism, actually, if you read his book, he started with a set of values. And so it's the values that we need to create, how we see the planet. And then you have to build your economic system around it, which one of the central challenges around perpetual growth. And how do we do that?
I think to answer Catherine's second question, which was how much is this kind of collaborative ownership a shift in values and priorities, and how much is driven by straitened economic circumstances? Because that is one thing that does define my generation, is that a lot of us are quite poor. I think it's both of those. I think people really see the value and the advantages from a social or environmental perspective of these, for example, tool libraries. I think you can even kind of rent furniture and things like that. And I think obviously they make sense because, like, you know, not many of us can afford to own our own car, for example, and therefore a car club is so much better because you're not paying for the car, you're just paying for per ride. What I would say as well, there's a third thing. I think my generation is quite used to being pandered to, and maybe that's unfair, but we like convenience, and I think these things are all very convenient as well, which is neither a bad nor a good thing. I think it's just a third element, and I think if we can marry solutions which speak to our values and our priorities, which speak to our financial circumstances or lack thereof, and speak to our need for convenience and for making our lives a bit easier, then I think those are the solutions that we should be prioritizing in a newism.
I think I agree, but it's interesting there when you said at the beginning there of the answer that, you know, your generation is poor. Right. So is it poor compared with, you know, my folks' generation? So who maybe didn't have a car, and then they didn't have central heating, which meant you had frost in the inside of the window all the time, you know, ice, and therefore were colder. But it didn't necessarily see themselves as poor per se, that generation. So yeah. And it was because they did share things and were more neighborly, people would say. I think it's impossible to compare. But it's interesting that young people are actually, if you look at the equality gaps, wealth gaps that we have in our society, they're huge. But comparing with other generations, early baby boomer generation with current generation in terms of whether they're poorer or richer, I'm not sure that that's the case. But it's kind of, again, it comes down to this issue about values and how we feel about ourselves, because you can be, in a situation whereby you don't have a car, but you can be quite happy. I think in part the baby boomer generation was the message that we were given by the marketing, advertising people is you are happy if you have a car. You're happy if you're traveling halfway around the world, polluting the atmosphere, whatever. Oh, nice clothes. But that and we have to challenge that. And that comes down to, again, I think what Catherine's driving at here is kind of the values, what the values we have to start with. What does happiness mean? What does poor mean? What does, et cetera, et cetera. Getting all of that clear, and then you build your economic system on it.
Absolutely. And I think that is a good place to wrap up. I've really, really enjoyed that. I always enjoy our conversations. And it's been so great for us to have the contributions and the questions and the thoughts from our audience. Adds a new element, new thinking, which is actually the entire point of the newism, is to have more thinking from more people. So thank you so much for joining us. We hope that you'll carry on joining us on our journey. We've got lots coming up in the next few months, new positioning, new launches. We're going to kick off our podcast again. Hopefully one day we'll be able to do live events in person. There'll be more of these. Lots of exciting things, and we're really grateful for your support today.
Yep, I can just echo that. Thank you very much. And news is going to be doing a lot more in the future. So hopefully you'll join in with us and keep in touch. Thank you very much.
Thank you all so much. Take care. Bye.
Bye.